Chapter 3, The New Rome. When the smoke, sand, and dust of Operation Desert Storm settled, the United States came out not only on top of Iraq, but of the world. When just a few years ago, pundits were bemoaning America's decline, they now refer to the United States as the world's premier military and political heavyweight. The world's sole remaining superpower, said Time magazine, an idea expressed by commentators everywhere. And not only is America the superpower, but, according to columnist Charles Krauthammer, there is, quote, no prospect in the immediate future of any power to rival the United States, close quote. Talking about America's new role as the world's only superpower, Palestinian Liberation Organization Chief Yasser Arafat called Washington, D.C., the new Rome. The new Rome? Why? Because the old Rome had been the unrivaled superpower of its age, and the United States is now in that position. Arafat's words, of course, invoke the Adventist interpretation of prophecy. In Daniel 7, the prophet dreamed of four winds that, quote, strove upon the great sea, Daniel 7:2, out of which came forth four beasts. The first was like unto a lion and had eagle's wings. The second was like unto a bear. The third was like unto a leopard. And the fourth was, quote, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. And it had 10 horns. Out of the fourth beast arose the powerful little horn with eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. This little horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. It spoke great words against the Most High, and the saints were delivered into his hand for a time, and half a time. Daniel placed more emphasis on this little horn, and he gave more details concerning it than for any other beast in his prophecy, a significant point considering that the others symbolized great world empires, Babylon, the lion, Medo-Persia, the bear, Greece, the leopard, and the fourth beast, pagan Rome. Why would the prophecy have accorded so much space to the little horn unless it was to be a major world player that would be equal to or even exceed the empires that preceded it? This little horn, of course, was papal Rome. No other interpretation works. Those identifying the little horn as Seleucid King Antiochus IV Epiphanes might as well try making it fit Bugs Bunny. It's Rome. In Revelation 13, imagery from Daniel 7 is repeated, linking the two chapters. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. Revelation 13:1. Already, three images from Daniel 7 reappear here. Sea, rising beast, and 10 horns. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. Revelation 13:2. Again, we have images from Daniel 7. Leopard, bear, lion. This beast in Revelation has a mouth, quote, speaking great things in blasphemy, and power was given him to continue 42 months. Revelation 13:5. This beast also made war with the saints and overcame them. Revelation 13:7. The mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, the making war with the saints and overcoming them, all are images from Daniel 7. Even the 42 months is another way of saying the times, and half a time of Daniel 7. The composite beast in Revelation 13 is obviously the same power emphasized in Daniel 7, papal Rome. However, in Revelation 13, another power immediately follows Rome. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. Though this nation starts out with gentle lamb-like qualities, it speaks like a dragon. Adventists have always identified it as the United States, which will become an oppressive, persecuting power that, quote, exercises all of the power of the first beast before him, close quote. Close quote. Who was that first beast before him? Rome. And America is now the new Rome? What makes this sudden ascension of America so exciting is that just a few years ago, alarmists were decrying America's decline. Johnny can't read, Johnny can't write, Johnny can't fight was the warning. Japanese and German kids were smarter, better educated, better trained than their American counterparts. And thus, the nation was declining. Now, of course, in the aftermath of the Gulf War, the myth of America's decline has been exposed. The United States has been losing its economic edge, no doubt, though Japan itself has been in a spiraling recession, and Germany has been hurt by the huge cost of reunification. Yet that still didn't stop America from leading the coalition against Saddam when our rich rivals, such as Japan and Germany, were paralyzed by the conflict. Deutschmarks and Japanese yen, in and of themselves, didn't automatically translate into geopolitical power. whatever its economic woes, America has assumed a leadership role not only of the West, but of almost the whole world. Before the Gulf crisis, wrote Charles Krauthammer, American declinists were lamenting America's fall from its perch atop the world in their favorite benchmark year, 1950. Well, in 1950, the United States engaged in a war with North Korea. It lasted 3 years, cost 54,000 lives, and ended in a draw. 41 years later, the United States engaged in a war with Iraq, a country of comparable size. It lasted 6 weeks, cost 143 American lives, and ended in a rout. If the Roman Empire had declined at that rate, you'd be reading this in Latin. Of course, the Koreans and the North Vietnamese had the whole communist world behind them. Iraq didn't. But that's the point. Had Saddam enjoyed the backing of the Soviets, the story would have ended differently. The U.S. wouldn't have risked World War III with Moscow just to put the Emir of Kuwait back on his throne. With our major adversary gone, what other nation could stand up to the United States? None, which is why National Public Radio correspondent called George Bush after the Gulf War the president of the world. When a Marxist-led coalition overthrew a satellite regime in Ethiopia, whom did both sides call upon to mediate the takeover? The United States. When Boris Yeltsin first took office, where was his first visit? The United States. When the Baltic states began their attempted breakaway from the Soviet Union, from whose constitution were they quoting? The United States. And when Saddam invaded Kuwait, whose military led the liberation? The United States. These trends began even before the Gulf War, which didn't make America the new world leader. It simply revealed that, after the collapse of Soviet and European communism, America already was. Thus, writes Krauthammer, we now have a, quote, highly unusual world structure with a single power, the United States, at the apex of the international system. Close quote. According to prophecy, the world will face a highly unusual situation when the United States forces the world to worship the image of the beast. The United States' unrivaled superpower status at the apex of the international system fits perfectly into the Adventist scenario of last days. By identifying the lamb-like beast of Revelation 13:11 as the United States, our pioneers basically predicted that America would have to become the dominant political and military power. Otherwise, how could it enforce the mark of the beast upon the world? The Adventist identification was remarkable for one particular reason. Adventists initially made their interpretation when the United States was hardly a world power, much less the dominant one. In 1851, J.N. Andrews was the first Adventist in print to specifically identify Protestant America as the power represented by the second beast. In Thoughts on Revelation 13 and 14, Andrews identifies a two-horned beast of Revelation 13, quote, as our own country, close quote, the United States. In 1884, Ellen White wrote that, quote, the image of the beast represents another religious body clothed with similar power. The formation of this image is the work of that beast whose peaceful ride and mild profession render it so striking a symbol of the United States. In the 1888 Great Controversy, she was even more forceful. What nation of the New World was in 1798 rising into power, giving promise of strength and greatness, attracting the attention of the world? The application of the symbol admits of no question. One nation and only one meets the specifications of this prophecy. It points unmistakably to the United States of America. If this interpretation, in which America would force the mark of the beast upon the world, seemed implausible even 10 years ago, how did it appear in the mid-1800s, when the big powers were still the old world ones, Prussia, France, Austria-Hungary, and England? In 1851, when Andrews first published his identification of the two-horned beast, America had a peacetime army of about 20,000 men, one-tenth the number of combatants at the Battle of Waterloo alone. In 1814, less than 40 years before his article, the British burned Washington, D.C. In 1867, Sitting Bull's Braves wiped out General Custer's 7th U.S. Cavalry Regiment. Thus, 16 years after Andrews' prediction, and only 8 years before Ellen White's, published in 1884, America was still fighting Indians, and not so successfully always either. And this was a nation that was going to force the world to make an image to the beast? Of course, the pioneers, Ellen White included, expected these events to happen in their lifetime, and indeed the Lord could have come back then. The point is merely that in the 1800s, the fulfillment of these prophecies didn't seem as possible as it does today. Not until World War I did the United States become an international force to be reckoned with. Nevertheless, even in 1933, when Hitler became Führer, the United States had only the 16th largest army in the world, smaller than Spain's, Turkey's, even Poland's. After emerging victorious from World War II, America did enjoy unrivaled hegemony, but not for long, because the Soviet Union soon challenged it everywhere, including space. Older Americans remember Sputnik and the ensuing panic because the Reds were orbiting satellites over our heads, while, as Tom Wolfe wrote in The Right Stuff, American rockets always blew up. Once the Soviet Union became a superpower on par with the United States, it was hard to see how America could ever fulfill its prophetic role. If because of the Soviets, the U.S. couldn't kick Fidel out of Cuba, how could it ever enforce the mark of the beast upon the world? Now, of course, the Soviet Union has disappeared, and with it, the most implacable barrier to Adventist eschatology. "I'd like us to be," said George Bush in 1992, "the undisputed leader of the world." No doubt President Bill Clinton would like it, too. "If the New World Order means anything," wrote Krauthammer, "it is an assertion of American interest and values in the world." America, of course, has values worth asserting, lamb-like qualities such as democracy and religious freedom. Unfortunately, according to prophecy, this nation will speak like a dragon, and it will make, quote, "the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed," Revelation 13:12. With no rivals, and with the Cold War revealing why the U.S. should allow none, America is better positioned now than ever to fulfill its role of causing as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. It's not called the New Rome for nothing.